Hello and welcome to the Harvard EdCast, a series of conversations with thought leaders in the field of education from across the country and around the world. I'm Iman Rastegari, sitting in for Matt Weber, and today I'm talking with Mitch Resnick, professor of learning research at the MIT Media Lab. Mitch recently published a new book called Lifelong Kindergarten, Cultivating Creativity Through Projects, Passion, Peers, and Play. Mitch Resnick, welcome to the Harvard EdCast.
It's great to be joining you.
So the title of your book is Lifelong Kindergarten, and in it you say that you believe kindergarten is the greatest invention of the last millennium. So why is that?
I should start by saying that many people don't even think of kindergarten as an invention. But in fact, I think it really was, that kindergarten was not just bringing an education system down to younger kids. When the first kindergarten was developed almost 200 years ago, it was really trying to bring a different approach to education and learning. The first kindergarten was started by Friedrich Froebel in Germany, and he realized that the approach to education at the time really wasn't going to work with younger kids, that the education approach at the time was really based on a broadcast model of an instructor delivering information or delivering instruction and students sitting there writing it down. He knew that wasn't going to work with five-year-olds. So he really rethought the whole process, realized it had to be a much more interactive process of kids learning by interacting with materials in the world around them, interacting with other people. And to do that, he realized he also needed some different materials. So he invented a set of new materials that became known as Froebel's gifts, blocks and tiles and sticks with peas where you could build sculptures. Because he realized that he wanted to give kids a chance to create things to get a better understanding of the world, that people would understand the world by making models of it. I think that approach to kindergarten is really aligned with the needs of today's society, even though it was developed 200 years ago, that as kids in the traditional kindergarten were playfully designing and creating things, they were developing as creative thinkers. They learned how to come up with a new idea, create a project based on those ideas, experiment with it, play with it, share it with others, get feedback, and adapt and refine their creation. Through that process, they really were developing as creative thinkers. And that's exactly what we need in today's society, that we live in a society where things are changing more rapidly than ever before. So helping kids learn a particular set of facts or skills is not going to really prepare them. We really need to help kids develop as creative thinkers so they can come up with creative new approaches to the unexpected things that they confront in the future. So I really feel that the kindergarten approach is something that is useful not just at age five, but throughout the education system. Unfortunately, many schools around the world aren't set up that way, that you know the children spend too much time listening to lectures, filling out worksheets. And in fact, that approach is even seeping down into some of today's kindergartens. That you go into many kindergartens today and kids are drilling on phonics flashcards and filling out math worksheets. So many of today's kindergartens are becoming more like the rest of school. What I propose in the book is exactly the opposite. We want to make the rest of school, in fact, the rest of life, more like the classic traditional kindergarten.
You also named your research group here at MIT Lifelong Kindergarten. So you've talked about making life more like kindergarten. How do you put the principles of kindergarten into practice here in your research?
So I think actually in the Media Lab overall, we've really tried to make the Media Lab more like a big kindergarten. Even when we were designing the building, tried to make it have the feel of a big kindergarten. Of course, the technologies are different than what you see in kindergarten. It's not just wooden blocks and finger paint, but microcontrollers and 3D printers. But the process is the same, that the students here at the Media Lab are constantly, you know, creating things in collaboration with one another in a playful spirit. So we sometimes talk about that approach to learning through four guiding principles that all begin with the letter P: projects, passion, peers, and play. So I see that as a kindergarten approach to learning where learners are working on projects based on their passions in collaboration with peers in a playful spirit. And we think that's where it's going to lead to the most creative activity. And that's worked in the traditional kindergarten, and we make it work here at the Media Lab as well. So we think the Media Lab has become such a creative place because it's based on those kindergarten principles of project, passion, peers, and play. And then my own group at the Media Lab, we're trying to spread that approach to learners of all ages. which is why we call our group Lifelong Kindergarten. So we want to take what's worked best in kindergarten and here at the Media Lab and provide opportunities for all kids of all ages to be able to, you know, explore and experiment and express themselves in that same spirit. In some ways, you could think of it as us trying to take the spirit of Froebel's gifts, but extend it to all ages. So thinking, what if Froebel wanted to develop a new set of toys and materials, not just for five-year-olds, but for all ages, and using the new materials and technologies of today? So how can we take advantage of, you know, new technologies to keep the spirit of kindergarten and Froebel's gifts, but to bring those technologies, make them available to learners of all ages everywhere?
So I love this idea. What are other places that you think you could apply these principles, and what would it look like to implement them?
Some of the type of technologies we developed to support these principles, one of our main projects now is this programming language Scratch, which is designed to enable kids to create their own interactive stories and games and animations on the computer and share their creations with one another. And there's now millions and millions of kids around the world who are creating and sharing projects with Scratch. As we developed Scratch, we really tried to, you know, base it on those four principles of projects, passion, peers, and play. In many places where kids are learning to code, which is becoming popular these days, they learn to code by solving a problem that's given to them. And we take a different approach. We let kids work on projects, and we make sure they have opportunities to work on projects that they're passionate about. So if you look on the Scratch website, you see this incredible variety of different types of projects. You know, everything from, you know, simulations to interactive, you know, greeting cards to, you know, recreations of classic video games. You see a wide range of different projects, which to us is an indication that kids are working on things based on their passions. And when we launched the Scratch programming language, we did it as part of an online community where kids are sharing their projects with one another, because we wanted the peers to be an important part of the process. So the online community serves as both a source of inspiration and audience. When kids go to the Scratch website, they can look at millions of projects created by others, which sparks their imagination, gives them new ideas of what they might want to work on. And as they create projects, there's a built-in audience. They can put their project and share their project on the website, and they get feedback and suggestions from others in the community. And we also try to emphasize the final P of play by making sure that you can, you know, as you build with Scratch projects, the programming is somewhat like putting Lego bricks together. You put graphic programming blocks together, and you can easily put them together, take them apart in a playful, interactive way, so the kids are constantly iteratively refining and adapting and their projects in a playful spirit. So we designed Scratch so that kids can have that kindergarten approach of working on projects related to their passions in collaboration with peers in a playful spirit.
The idea of creativity can sometimes feel very amorphous. I'm wondering, how would you define creativity? And then why do you think creativity is such a necessary life skill for people to learn?
So I do think that creative thinking is more important today than ever before. Of course, it's always been important and always been a central element of the human experience. But I think because of the rapid change in today's society, creative thinking is becoming even more important. That we know that today's children will face a never-ending stream of new and unknown and uncertain situations in the future. So to thrive and to live happy lives in the future, they're really going to need to learn to think and act creatively. So I think a key to success and happiness in the future, whether for an individual, for a community, for a company, or even for a nation as a whole, will really be based on the ability to think and act creatively. But what does that really mean? I think sometimes people get led astray by having a vision of creativity that is focused on just artistic creation. And of course, artistic creation is important, but that's not all of creativity. In fact, I usually use the phrase creative thinking to highlight that it's not just about artistic expression, but all types of creative thought, artistic expression, scientific thought. And also, we to emphasize that it happens in our everyday life. sometimes people associate creativity just with Nobel Prize winners and artists who have their works in major museums. But people have creative approaches to things in their everyday life. When people are, you know, organizing a birthday party for a friend, they come up with creative ways of doing it. In everyday life, people are always having opportunities to express themselves creatively. So we want to make sure that people, you know, develop their abilities and capacities for that type of creative, you know, endeavors. I think it's going to become important to people in their work life because more and more jobs will be based on the ability to think creatively. But it's not just about the workplace. Also for people to, you know, in their personal lives and their community lives, creative thinking is becoming more and more important. And it's not just about economic benefits, but I think it, you know, creative thinking brings joy and meaning and purpose to someone's life. So really, I think there's nothing more important than for us to help all children grow up with the opportunities to develop their creative capacities.
So how do we teach it? If we know that it's super important, how do we actually teach it to children?
Yeah. And I think sometimes when we think about teaching it, people might think about how can we give people some specific rules to follow to become creative. And I don't think that's really the way that it works. Rather, I sometimes think about how do we nurture, you know, creativity and creative thinking? How do we create the conditions in which creative thinking will take root and grow? So trying to provide kids with the right environments, opportunities to explore and experiment. So some of it is, if we look at the root of creativity, it's create. So giving kids lots of opportunities to create is part of what it's about. Making sure that kids feel comfortable with experimenting and taking risks. We know that in the creative process, it often involves trying things and then not going right at first. So if kids are in an environment where when something goes wrong, they get ridiculed or made fun of, they're not going to take risks and try new things, and they won't really develop their creative capacities. So it's so important for us to create environments where kids feel comfortable with trying new things, testing the boundaries, taking risks, because that's what's really going to be needed for them to develop as creative thinkers.
Does that mean, do you believe that everyone, therefore, is inherently creative?
I think everyone has the capacity to become more and more creative. We see kids as they, you know, are growing up, they start so curious, experimenting, trying new things. So there's all the creative potential. And I think there's, you know, creativity there, but we have to nurture that creativity for them to further develop their creative capacities. I want to avoid the two extremes that sometimes, you know, people think that, well, you have to just be born with it and then you're creative and it goes on. It is something that gets nurtured and you continue to develop over time. So I see creativity as something that, you know, it's something that's continually, we need to continually support to help it continue to grow.
What do you hope the impact of this book will be? In your ideal scenario, how would the lessons of this book be implemented?
Well, I think my hope is that everyone from educators to parents to policymakers will see the book as a way to rethink some of their assumptions about learning and creative thinking. I think too often people are stuck in a certain mindset about the learning process. Too many people think of education in terms of delivery of information or delivery of instruction. And so I think we need to give people some different models for how to think about learning. I also hope it'll get people rethinking the goals of what education is for, that it's not just about learning particular skills for the workplace, but it's sort of helping to develop the whole person and that creative thinking will be important in people's lives, all parts of their lives. I think we need to first get people to get an understanding of what the goals or an agreement on the goals of education before we can make a lot of progress on how we're going to achieve those goals. Now, those are difficult, you know, those aren't easy. It's not easy to get that type of new vision and to shift people's mindsets and the way they think about learning and education. But it's really important, so it's worth us continuing to work at it. I sometimes say that I'm a short-term pessimist and long-term optimist. I'm short-term pessimist because I know how difficult it is to shift people's mindsets. If people are thinking about education and learning in one way, they're not going to change overnight. Also, the educational system has lots of sort of structures in place that aren't easy to change. Whereas if we really want to support creative thinking and creative learning, we'll need to break down some of those barriers. You know, we need to break down the barriers between different disciplines. I think we should break down the barriers, you know, between the ages, that we want older students working with younger students and all learning, you know, from one another. We shouldn't segregate people into separate silos by age and by discipline. But making those type of changes is not easy. So that's what makes me a short-term pessimist. But I'm a long-term optimist because I can see the cultural trends pushing in the direction that the needs for creative thinking are more important and will continue to become more important. And you start to see examples of how more parents and educators and policymakers are recognizing the importance of creative thinking and are recognizing the need for change. So I do see that there's a greater recognition of the importance of change. And another reason for long-term optimism is today's young people. You know, in working with young people in the Scratch online community or some of the after-school centers where we work, you know, we see them through working with these new projects based on their passions, developing a new sense of the possibilities of a different approach for learning. And they don't want to turn back. You know, they don't want to just, you know, extend the traditional approaches to education and learning. So I think as they grow up, they'll become agents of change, that they will want to, you know, lead changes in society so that there will be greater support, you know, for an a creative approach, you know, to learning.
That's awesome. To wrap up, I'm going to focus in on the book itself, and specifically on the cover of the book. So for our listeners who haven't seen it, the cover of the book has a beautiful image of these ridged circular objects in a variety of colors. So I had to ask, what are these objects, and how did you choose that direction for your cover design? Yeah.
Well, when I was talking to, the book is published by MIT Press, and I was talking to the designer at MIT Press, I said that, you know, when we think about creativity and creative learning, it's always this combination of structure and freedom, that there's some systematicity, but also, you know, an openness to allow people to explore in different ways. So I'd like to, when I think about the imagery around creativity, it shouldn't be something that's totally rigid, but also shouldn't just be let your dreams run wild. That I think the most creative work happens when we allow people to, you know, to follow their fantasies, but provide enough structure and systematicity so that they can make their dreams into realities. So I think that was the idea of what we're looking for. And I think the cover captures it some. There's a systematicity of these, you know, similarly shaped objects, you know, on the screen, but also then an openness with different colors and text and different, you know, offsets around the cover. So I was trying to capture that. The actual objects are a certain type of Lego object, and which also connected to my work, since I've done so much work with the Lego company over the years, developing ways for kids not just to build structures like houses and castles with Lego, but to program their Lego creations to make them communicate and come alive. So kids could build robots that move around or artistic sculptures that react when you approach them. So I think the Lego metaphor for me does capture some of that, you know, creative approach that's bringing together structure and freedom, the structure of the Lego brick, but also the freedom to use it in so many different ways. So these aren't traditional Lego bricks on the cover, but it is a Lego object of many different colors that fill the cover of the book.
Well, I think this is a perfect place to end. Mitch Resnick's new book, Lifelong Kindergarten, is on bookshelves now. It's a compelling read and I think a really important contribution to the way that we think about both education and creativity as a life skill. Mitch, thank you so much for joining me on the Harvard EdCast.
It was great talking with you.
This has been the Harvard EdCast, a production of the Harvard Graduate School of Education. I'm your guest host, Iman Rastegari. Thanks so much for listening.